This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraja aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, retired jockey Christina McManigal, we are together again in our Lexington, Kentucky studios and ready to roll for the next hour. And Christina, each and every week we have the opportunity to visit with so many of the people that are front and center in the game. And you've been there. You've been in the spotlight as a rider. You know what it's like. And tonight, no different. We're going to have a lot of fun visiting with jockey Sheldon Russell over the course of the next hour.
We will. We will. It's an honor to have them. They take the time to visit with us, and we hope everyone enjoys the show.
We do want to welcome everybody joining us across North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and of course, everybody streaming us worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Don't forget, you can go back to our site, check out podcasts of this program and all of our shows, all available for you, horseracingradio.net and HRRN on iTunes. So no excuses anymore.
No excuses.
All right, let's get right to it. Jockey Sheldon Russell with us for the full hour here this evening on Jock Talk. The 27-year-old born in Louisiana. You'll never know it, though, when you hear his voice, because he really doesn't sound Cajun by any stretch of the imagination. He is fast approaching 1,000 career winners and currently sitting at 989, so he's almost there. His mounts have earned more than $24 million in purses, and he's with us now on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Sheldon, appreciate you taking the time. Welcome to the show.
Oh, no problem. Thanks, Mike and Christina, for having me on.
Where is that Cajun accent, by the way?
I don't think I really have a Cajun accent. I only spent a little time in Louisiana, maybe 6 months before my mom and dad relocated back to England. So I don't even know if I had enough time to actually pick up an accent.
Well, listen, $24 million in purses. I guess maybe it's safe to say that you're rich, right?
I couldn't really say I'm rich, no. I've got a lot of bills to pay and a lot of hard work. I'd say my agent's very rich.
Yeah, I'm sure. Closing in on 1,000 career victories. How, Sheldon, in all seriousness, how aware are you of that milestone?
I think as we got closer and closer, I'm sort of, now I look back and I think, you know, it's taken a long time to actually get here, and to actually get close to 1,000, I think it's a huge achievement, and I'm very fortunate enough to be doing what I really like doing.
Well, honestly, Sir Sheldon, you haven't ridden for too entirely long. You've ridden for 9 full years, and it's really pretty impressive considering all that you've been through, and you moved from England to the United States, of course, and you've had quite a few injuries along the way, and it hasn't been an easy road. So you have to be pretty proud looking back and seeing all that you've accomplished. And tell us a little bit about when you first came to the States and when you first started to ride.
You know, looking back now, when I first came over, I came over to work for trainer Michael Dickinson. And at first, I was only meant to come over for 3 months and get some American racing experience. But just working on the farm and getting introduced to Michael Dickinson, I just ended up staying a bit longer than I expected. I really enjoyed my time back on the farm. I think I ended up staying there for a year and a half. And when he came to the end of his career, he was winding down on horses, and he was getting into making the synthetic tracks. And it was him, looking back now, it was him that had told me to stay in America and pursue my dream of being a an American jockey. So if it wasn't for him, I don't think I'd really be here right now talking to you guys.
Yeah, I know you consider England to be your home, Sheldon, but I mentioned being born in Louisiana. How old were you when you moved from Louisiana to England?
I'm not 100% sure, but I was definitely younger than a year. I might have been 6 or 9 months old. I wasn't old at all.
Yeah.
My mom and dad, same sort of situation. My dad was over here on a holiday visa. My mom ended up falling pregnant. So I was actually born over here. And as soon as I was able to fly back home or back to England, I guess they just packed up their stuff and they headed on home. I don't think it was planned or anything like that. Just one of them things that had happened.
Yeah, your dad was involved with the business too, wasn't he?
Actually, he used to be a jockey in South Africa, and he just got a little bit too heavy, so he came over to America to just be a race rider and try and make some money doing it that way. But he couldn't finalize the visa and get a sponsor, so he was only able to stay here for a certain amount of months before they had to go back home.
Now, you also lived in South Africa, is that right, Sheldon?
Yes, I spent some time over there. I spent 9 years over there. And I think I was 9 or 10 years old before we actually moved to England full time.
When did you first know that you wanted to be a jockey?
I think it was like the late years of high school. I was around 15 or 16. And my dad was working up in Newmarket, which is like a little horse village in England. So I'd go up there on the weekends and I would spend time with him, you know, Saturday afternoons and Sunday mornings. And he was working for trainer Michael Stout back then, and he was like a bar foreman, like an assistant trainer. So I'd just go up there on the weekend, spend some time with him, and I just took a liking to it around that age, like 15 or 16. I really wanted to learn how to ride. But back then, it was very important for me to finish high school. And once I finished high school, I had applied to do a course at the British Racing School, which is a three-month course where they teach you pretty much everything. They teach you how to ride, to look after the horses, and you know, become a jockey or an exercise rider or a groom, if anything.
What do you remember about the first time you got on a horse?
Whew, I'm not sure if it was a horse. I think it was a pony, the first one I got on. I just really enjoyed it. I don't think it ran off or done anything silly. It was just very well behaved. I'm pretty sure it is maybe 15 years old, so it was a bit too old to be playing around. But I really enjoyed it, and ever since that first day, I think I really wanted to be a jockey or learn how to ride.
How was the school, Sheldon? Did you start from the ground up grooming horses, and what all did they teach you there?
Yeah, so I finished high school at 16, and I was helping my dad out on a work experience course. So I had a rough idea, like he would help me, he would let me ride the pony every other day or whatever. So I had a rough idea on, you know, how to ride a horse, but not going, obviously, at full speed. So, I mean, the school, the British Racing School in England is great. You can go there not knowing anything, and they'll teach you everything, whether it be grooming horses or cleaning out their stalls, walking them, learning to ride, just everything, really. It's a great school, and if anyone is interested in learning how to ride, definitely look into going there.
You know, it seems like every kid at that age, Sheldon, when you're late in those high school years, you really don't know exactly what you want to do. Was there ever a time when you considered doing something other than being a jockey or even being involved with racing?
Well, in your last year of high school, where I went to school, they give you it was a 3 weeks work experience. So just before you finished high school, you get 3 weeks to go out into the wide open world and go pursue or get your feet wet on something you wanted to do. So that my 3 weeks was spent up in Newmarket working with my dad. And it sort of gives you a rough idea on what to expect and what goes into the job. So then them 3 weeks of work experience, that's pretty much what made my mind up. But other than that, no, I always wanted to be involved in horse racing.
What did your dad think, given that he was in the business and he rode? What did he think when you first told him what you wanted to do?
He was very supportive. You know, I look up to my dad a lot, and he's helped me a lot out in my career. He was very supportive, even from day one. You know, it was him. He was the one that helped me you know, learn on the pony, and he had exercises at his house. So he taught me a lot, and, you know, still to this day, he's, you know, he's my number one fan. And we speak on, you know, speak on a daily basis after our ride races here or up and coming big races. And, you know, he's been there for me since day one.
Sheldon, my dad, I grew up playing baseball, and my dad coached me around those same years that you're talking about, those, you know, junior high school years. And I can remember there were things that he would tell me that I didn't want to hear because he was my dad. But if the coach told me the very same thing, it was gospel. Was it kind of like that with you and your dad to some extent?
I think somewhere along them lines, very similar, yes.
Yeah, why do we not want to listen to our parents at that age? I mean, I found out later he was actually right, and he was telling me the exact same thing that the coaches were telling me. But it's an interesting dynamic. What would you say, Sheldon, is the one main lesson that he taught you that even today you still remember those words or that one thing that he said to you?
You know, just to be smart, you know, it's not something that you can do for a long time. So just, you know, save money and just work hard, be nice to everybody. He's just, you know, he taught me a lot of the basic things, you know, getting into the game so early. I mean, I was still so young. 16 years old is a long time ago now, looking back. But he taught me everything. What else could I say? He just taught me, you know, to save money and just be smart.
Sheldon, I remember when we rode together at in Maryland, your mother came to visit you and watch you ride. And has your father been to visit the States and watch you ride?
Yes, it's been a while now, but the last time he was over, I think it's 3 years ago now, he came over for a Maryland Million, which is one of our big days here in Laurel. And he came over for a visit, which was nice. It's nice to have him on our biggest day here at Laurel. And it was nice to, I think I ended up winning the main race, the Maryland Classic on 80 faster catch that day. So looking back now, it was nice to get him in the win picture. And, you know, it's something I could look back on.
Is there part of you that wanted to win more that day because your dad was sitting there watching?
Definitely. And I still remember to this day, I think going in, I think I had five favorites. I really thought it was going to be a big day. But unfortunately, the others just hadn't run to their best, or it just wasn't our day. But I was happy to get that main win for Tim Keith. And, you know, that horse ended up being a really good horse.
Talking with Sheldon Russell on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Sheldon, you start your career in England, you ride your first 50 races, and then you decide to come to the United States. You start working with Michael Dickinson. Talk about some of the main challenges that you faced and the things you had to overcome in those early days when you came to the States.
You know, when I first came over, like I had said earlier, I was only really coming over for 3 months. So I was so used to just exercising, you know, three horses. That's all you really get on in England, because the exercise routines are so much longer. It's not like we just jump on, walk 100 meters to the track. You know, England, sometimes you'll have to walk the horse 30, 45 minutes just to get him to the gallops. So working on the farm, I was getting on 9 or 10 a day. So even just getting on that many horses every day was just making me a lot fitter, a lot stronger, and I was able to gallop a lot more horses and get a lot of experience.
Now, did Michael Dickinson, did he give you advice as far as how to better your riding skills, or how helpful was he in that?
He was great. He would send me to Delaware Park, which wasn't far from the farm in Northeast, and every time we had like a 2-year-olds that were coming, were getting close to having their first race, he would send me to Delaware Park, and he would help me, you know, improve getting horses out of the gate and, you know, working horses on the racetrack and getting to learn, you know, learning to swap horses' leads. So I just got a lot of experience from him. And, you know, especially when the jockeys came in to work the horses on the farm, I was always working with them. I remember Ramon came in a few times There was Joe Rocca Jr. He would come in, Jose Caraballo, all the big jocks would come and work some of our horses. And I always remember now that Dickinson would always allow me to work with the jockeys. And, you know, they would always help me and give me some advice that I still remember to this day.
Like what?
Like they would help me with the leads and obviously, you know, standing in the gate, what to do, whipping techniques and the whole pulling down the goggles and just staying relaxed and not getting in a big hurry.
Did you have some of those veteran riders that you looked up to when you first came to the States?
I think Ramon, when Ramon came into the farm for the first time to work horses and we all got to meet him, there was like three or four of us that were exercising for Michael back then. And when he first came to the farm, he was just, I just remember him being just so professional. And I mean, he had done such great things in his career. And for him to come over to the farm and give us that time of day, because we all knew that he was riding, I don't know, probably the card at Delaware that day, and he wasn't in a rush. He sat down with us in the tack room and spoke with us, and you could just tell that he was special. He was a good guy, and he was one of my favorites.
Was it difficult for you then, the day that Ramon got hurt?
I think it was a very sad day for everyone, just because I think everyone knew how good he was and such, like, what a great person he was. He really was. I'm sure, you know, even to this day, he's dearly missed. I honestly think he could have been one of the greats. And he still is. You know, I was able to see him when we flew up to Florida 2 weeks ago to the Jockeys Guild meeting. He's still there. He's still very much involved in the horse racing and trying to improve the game and help the jockeys with insurance and everything. So it's really nice to see that he's still doing well and he's back healthy and happy now.
To those of you listening, our show helps the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, which helps jockeys like Ramon. And Sheldon, going back to Michael Dickinson, you galloped a particularly good racehorse for him. I think our listeners will know. Tell us about that.
Oof, back in the day, he had a lot of good horses. I had just come over, and he was just coming to the end of his career with the big horse Tappet. I didn't get a chance to get on him. He had another good one, A Waiver. But it wasn't until Dickinson sent me to Florida with the 3 2-year-olds, and we were getting ready to run them. And while I was out there, Palmetto's training track, after I'd galloped Michael's 3 horses, I mean, I still had the whole second half of the break. And he organized me a job to go gallop horses next door for Ian Wilkes. And I ended up getting on Street Sense for, I think it was 3 weeks.
Wow.
I got to gallop him while I was out there in Palmetto's. And that was a great 3 weeks of my life.
What's that like then when you watch him win the Kentucky Derby the way that he did, knowing that you had maybe a little bit of a role in that somehow?
You know, I was just very fortunate enough that Ian and Cole Nasca had given me the chance to gallop them. I think back then that you knew this horse was going to be something special. He was just very professional. He was always ahead of the game. He was, it's like driving a really nice car when you go and sit in a really nice car at a dealership and it's brand new. He was awesome. He was a great horse. And when he made it to the Kentucky Derby, you know, I had obviously gone back to the farm to work for Michael, and Ian Wilkes and Cole Nasca had sent me tickets to go to the Derby to watch him run. So I was very fortunate enough to go out to Churchill and watch him win the Kentucky Derby.
Wow, that's a great story.
Are you in the win picture?
No, I didn't manage to get in the win picture.
Talking
but just going there was great, and I really appreciate that. That's not something that a lot of people are able to do, and very fortunate to be given that opportunity.
Talking with jockey Sheldon Russell on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on HRRN. Sheldon, as you're watching him run in the Derby and you're watching Calvin ride him to victory, is there something inside you that says, man, I could do that. I'd love to be on that horse today.
True, that would it. I mean, just, you know, that was my first Derby I'd ever been to while I'd been over here in America. Just the atmosphere. I mean, you really have to go to take it all in just to see what a big deal it is. So obviously going there and, you know, watching Street Sense win the Derby, you know, it was possible. I was able to get on him in the morning. It was just, you know, getting that opportunity in the afternoon. And, what a great experience.
Sheldon, so when did you decide to take out your jock's license in the United States? When were you like, I'm ready. I'm ready to do this.
I think it was in 2007. Like I had said, Dickinson was coming to his, you know, to the end of his career. He was, you know, all the horses were parting ways and they were going to other trainers because he was taking a little break. And I'd give me my first five mounts over here in America. I'd rode one at Pimlico, one at Laurel, and a couple at Colonial, and I think it won at Monmouth. So when he had retired and everyone had gone their separate ways, he had helped me get an agent at Laurel Park. And I just, you know, called up the agent and made some arrangements to go to Colonial Downs for the summer and begin working with her, Tracy Campola.
What was your first really big break, Sheldon?
That was a really big break. Well, we went to Colonial Downs, and I think it had taken me about 20 mounts. I think I had 20 mounts there before I'd rode my first winner over here in America. And it ended up being, funny enough, it ended up being for an English trainer, and I ended up wearing, I remember the silks being like the English flag or the St. George's cross. So, you know, days like that, I just think, you know, that was a great day, and for the trainer as well. But the biggest break, I would say, winning the Colonial Turf Cup on Rahi Strada at Colonial Downs was a huge day for me and my agent at the time.
What year was that, Sheldon?
I want to say 2011.
Yeah, Rahi Strada was so cool. He was such a great horse. We used to see him at Arlington all the time, and he always seemed to show up with his best race, didn't he, Sheldon?
Yeah, he was. He was a really, you know, he was a very, really good turf horse. He, you know, he'd run long on the turf, and you know, to get the chance to ride him at Colonial in like Colonial's biggest races was huge. I remember him being, I think, 5-1, and just going back and watching his races the night before I actually got to ride him. I just remember being really excited, and I know my agent, who's still my agent now. Marty was, you know, he had been telling me all week, you know, this horse is really good. I'm really excited. And just to win, you know, the 500,000 Turf Cup on him was a great day. And still to this day was one of my biggest days.
I really expected you to say that your first big break was when you finished in front of Christina for the first time in an actual race. How many? You guys locked horns all the time, right?
Several times before as well.
That's pretty cool that we're talking to Sheldon Russell, and here you are, somebody who has competed against him multiple times.
I beat him, too, a few times.
Wow. But you notice how she snuck that right in, Sheldon.
I knew she wouldn't let that one slip by.
can't let you beat me all the time. Come on.
Yeah, that's I'm curious. That dynamic between riders. Sheldon, you're out there. You're competing against Christina. Christina, you're trying to beat Sheldon. You know, you want to win that race. The race is over. You have to come back to the jocks room. You have to get out and go do another race in 30 minutes or whatever it is. What's that dynamic like, especially if something happens during the race that necessarily you don't agree with, Christina?
Well, you know, we've gotten in a few fist fights before. No, I'm
you
just
and
kidding.
Sheldon?
kidding. I would kick his ass probably. But...
Wow, she is full of herself today, isn't she? No, but what's that dynamic like? Because it's not like in professional football where you have to go back to separate locker rooms. You have to go back, of course, you know, ladies and gentlemen, they go back to different rooms, but it's all in the same jocks room. What, Sheldon, what's that like, that dynamic after a race?
I really think, you know, after when the race is done, there's nothing really you or anyone else can do to change the results. And in the race, unless it's up to the stewards or if there's a claim of foul, there's nothing really you or another rider can do. I think you just got to go back to your corner, you know, get changed and go out there and, you know, prepare for the next race and give that trainer and that horse, you know, 100% effort and not worry about what had happened the race before.
Yeah, it's a great point.
Because at the end of the day, it's over and you just got to, you know, be fortunate enough that you're out there and you've made it back safely. Whether something bad has happened in the race, as long as you make it back, then I think you should just let it go.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, a lot of times we'll hear about, say, a defensive back in football who gets burned for a touchdown. Well, he has to come back the very next series, and he better be focused and get that out of his head. Otherwise, he's going to be in big trouble. I guess it's a lot like that with jockeys too, right? You have to have a short-term memory.
You really do, because it's dangerous enough out there without, you know, holding a grudge or worrying about little things like that. So, you know, you just got to just let it go and just ride your race. I think it's only fair to your next horse and the next trainer you ride for just to go out there with an open mind and give that horse 100% effort with not worrying about anything else.
Right, and I think there's also a certain type of camaraderie between the riders, just because, not always, but, you know, we're out there, we're all doing the same thing, we're all working hard, and you want to win, but at the same time, you're with these people all day, every day, so, you know. But Sheldon, quick question here before we go to the break. Turf or dirt?
Oof. Yeah, oof. I'm easy, really. You know, in the summertime, it's always nice to ride on the turf and travel around to all the different racetracks and to ride their turf courses. I had a great time at Arlington last summer. They have a fantastic turf course. You get to ride some really nice horses around there. Laurel Park has a great turf course as well. So it all depends, really. It all depends on the horse as well. I've rode some really nice dirt horses. So I don't really have a bias or a favorite. I'm honestly, right now, either or is fine with me.
Sheldon Russell here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Vodka. Sheldon, we heard you talk about going to the Kentucky Derby for the first time to watch Street Sense. When we come back, we're going to talk about the first time you went there to participate, not just be a spectator. That was with Done Talking in 2012. We'll talk about that on the other side of this break. It is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Xacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms, mgive.org/chi.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. time to play the Bet America way.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreds.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
Trainer Talk, presented by Phasing Tipton.
And we're going to kick things off with trainer Graham Motion, Hall of Fame trainer Phil Mott here on Trainer Talk. Roger Atfield is going to be with us for the next half an hour. Carl Nasker, an honor to have him on the show tonight. Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahee, nice enough to spend some time with us. I want to welcome Hall of Famer Bob Baffert to the program.
Trainer Talk, the biggest names in horse racing. Wednesdays, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 220 and XM 206. And always streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Heads are turned for home in the TVG Illinois Derby. Our entourage on the inside. Morgan's Gorilla right alongside second. Morgan's Gorilla now takes the lead. Our entourage racing second. Then closing up on the inside, third through the stretch, comes Done Talking. And on the far outside, Hakama putting in a late bid. Your leader, Morgan's Gorilla. Done Talking coming through for the lead. Done Talking on the inside. Got it! Morgan's Gorilla second, Hakama third, and then it was Saturday Lunch fourth, the 2012 TVG Illinois Derby at Hawthorne.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Christina McManigal, continuing our visit with 27-year-old jockey Sheldon Russell. Peter Galassi with the call of the 2012 Illinois Derby, and Done Talking, ridden by who else? Sheldon Russell, and he would eventually go on to give Sheldon his first berth in the Kentucky Derby, and Sheldon is back with us now here on Jock Talk. Sheldon, how's that for a little trip down memory lane?
Sure, I still got goosebumps. I haven't listened to that for it's been maybe a year now since I've seen or listened to that replay, and I got a little bit of goosebumps there listening to the stretch call.
How many times did you watch the replay after the race?
I don't want to say. I don't want to embarrass myself.
It's okay. You can tell us and the rest of HRN Nation.
Let's just say 10. 10's fine.
Hey, it's a big moment in your career. You really should. What do you remember when you think back to that day and then you hear that race call again? What goes through your mind?
I just remember going up to Hawthorne and it being absolutely freezing. It was my first time. Oh no, it was my second time at Hawthorne actually. It was a gloomy, dull day, and I know Hamilton Smith really liked this horse, and my valet here in Maryland had been galloping the horse, and he had really liked the horse as well. And I'd win two races on him coming into the. Coming into the Illinois Derby, and I know everyone was excited for him to run, and he was still such a long shot on the program, so we were just hoping that he would run a good race. I don't think anyone expected him to win. So looking back now, you know, obviously he had won that race. It was a great day, not only for myself, but there were so many other people involved that, you know, are good friends of mine. So it was the best day of my career, definitely.
What did he pay that day, Sheldon?
I'm not sure. I want to say he was double digits.
Yeah, I think he was a long shot. I think he was a long shot. But then he would go on to give you your first start in the Kentucky Derby, and you had only been riding for, 6 years? You were only 24 years old. Did you ever imagine you'd be in that position so quickly?
No, absolutely not. Just by him winning the Illinois Derby, he had qualified to get enough points for him to be in the starting lineup for the Kentucky Derby. And I just remember knowing that day that we were going to make the top 20 and make the cut. I know everyone was excited. I mean, it's not every day or every year you get that opportunity. And especially coming out of, you know, Laurel Park, just to know that he'd come out of Laurel Park, you know, it gives you a huge, you know, it's just a big buzz. Everyone around here was really excited for us to go out there and see what we could do.
Yeah, by the way, Dunn Talking was 12-1 when he won that Illinois Derby. Okay. What was that Derby experience like, the Kentucky Derby experience for you, Sheldon?
It was good. I went out there a week before the Derby and just wanted to get comfortable. So I took a week off racing here. I think we were at Pimlico at the time. So I just took a week off and, you know, Graham Motion had been willing enough to give me a few mounts a couple of days before the Derby just to get some of the jitters out and just to get comfortable. So I ended up riding, I think, 2 for Graham and 2 for Ian Wilkes before the Derby. And, yeah, great experience. I had done a lot of charity bartending, I think, 2 nights before the Derby with a few of the other Churchill Down jockeys. So it was really fun. It was a great experience. And honestly, I'd love to make it back there one day.
What was it like to step out onto the track on Derby Day and to just take it all in? I mean, you'd been through a lot to get to that point with your injuries, which we'll touch on later, but my gosh, that has to be just such an incredible feeling to look out and just really see what you've made it.
Yeah, it was a huge buzz. You know, the whole week before the Derby, even though the horse was a long shot on the big day and in the big race, there was camera guys coming over to the barn every day and wanting to have interviews with me, Hamilton, Smith, and the exercise rider, James Bridgman. And we were just all excited. We were all like 3 kids walking around Churchill Downs, just living the dream. It was a huge, huge experience and a huge week for us 3 guys out there. But we had a great time. You know, the horse didn't, you know, he ran his race. He tried his best. But, you know, just on that day, we just weren't good enough to win the big one.
You know, Sheldon, I'm going to tell you, I'm just a little bit put off right now because you mentioned the celebrity bartending and everything else you did throughout the week, but you didn't mention doing an interview with HRN on the backside the week of.
I'm so sorry, Mike. I forgot.
I mean, obviously that didn't matter to you. It didn't stick out to you anyways. Didn't come to mind.
No, but I remember coming over and doing the interview with you and Sean Clancy that one morning. I mean, there's so much going on. It's a huge week in racing. It's just to be involved and to actually make it to the Derby, it was just great. I think, like I said, I would love to try and make it back there. And that's what we, you know, we work here every morning. It's what we get up every day for days like that and to make it there. So just got to keep working and hopefully we can find another horse to get us back there.
Yeah, I think that was the first time I had the chance to meet you in that capacity and interview you. And I was just blown away by the professionalism and the way you were handling everything. Because I know there was an awful lot going on that week and you took everything step by step and took it all in stride. Now that you've been there, Sheldon, and you've kind of been to the top of the mountain, so to speak, by at least getting to the Kentucky Derby, does it make you want to get back there even more now that you got a taste of it?
Definitely. It was, you know, honestly, looking back on it now, the race actually went by so quickly. I mean, you really, it's over before you know it. But, you know, it's the biggest race in America. It's what us jockeys, you know, we work towards getting there. And, you know, hopefully we get that opportunity to go back there.
Were you nervous?
I would love to. I was very nervous, yeah. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't. But I was comfortable with the horse. I was very familiar with him, and he was an easy ride. He gave me a great trip around there.
Do all the nerves,
you know,
go away when you break out of the gate, though?
Yeah, as soon as you get on him and like get on your horse in the post parade, I think you just shut everything off and you're in your own zone. And you know, when they put you in the gate, then that's it. It's up to you and the horse.
So, Sheldon, I'm going to brag on you a bit. I remember when I was riding in Maryland, I had the opportunity to ride Dunn Talking later on in his career. But you were so helpful in telling me what the horse liked and, you know, go watch this replay. And so I think it's really great that you help out younger riders, and not that I'm that much younger, but you get what I'm saying. And I just think that's really great that you are one of the most helpful jockeys I've ever been around.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Is there part of you, Sheldon, that does feel an obligation to help the younger guys because you had people like Ramon that helped you when you were coming up?
Yeah, I think it's always nice because, you know, I've been in that situation where you get given the opportunity to ride a horse. And, you know, Christina had just, you know, she was still early in her career, and I knew that, you know, she was going to get given the chance to ride Don Talk. And so I was just trying to, you know, give her some advice and see if I could help her out a little bit, you know. That's all. You know, I've had a lot of people in my career help me out, and I know this feeling when somebody does help you and give you some advice. So as much as I can help somebody out, then I'll try.
Take Ramon out of the equation. Who's the best rider you've had the chance to be in the starting gate with?
I think Mario Pina is very good. I mean, for him to still be riding and for him to have done what he has done in the racing world is a huge accomplishment. So I think he's one of the best. And to know that he's still going now and still riding and doing good, I'm fortunate enough to call him one of my friends. He would have to be on the top of the list after Ramon.
Sheldon, when I was doing my research, I found the story of when you first came to Maryland as an apprentice and the injuries that you suffered there and that whole story. Tell us about that. And you went through a lot.
It was early in my career. I just, after Colonial Downs, we had come to Laurel for the getting ready for the winter meet. And I was riding a horse on the turf with Dickinson. Actually, it was a filly that I was galloping on the farm. So I ended up riding her here at Laurel, and I ended up clipping heels at the back of the field, and I fell off, and I think I broke three vertebrae in my lower back, so I had to take some time off. I think I took off 4.5 months at that injury. And it's just one of them things, you know. It happens, unfortunately, in many, you know, sports. You know, we get hurt. But I'm just fortunate enough that I took enough time off in between injuries and healed up the right way and done everything that I possibly could to feel good again and become stronger. And knock on wood, you know, I haven't been hurt for a while now. So just hopefully we can keep this up.
Sheldon, I think that's remarkable. You talk about the injuries that you sustained and broken vertebrae. I mean, we're not talking about a pulled hamstring, right? These are serious injuries. And I've asked John Velasquez this question in the past because here's a guy that's gone through, like you, so many different injuries, a ruptured spleen, all of these types of things. What makes a jockey want to come back and put themselves at risk again and get back on that horse?
I think definitely, like, the feeling when you win a race is, it's hard for me to explain, but it's such a great feeling and it's such a huge buzz to actually go out there, win a race, and just be appreciated by everybody. You know, it's a lot of hard work that goes into doing that, and to have results and to see results at the end of the line or the end of the tunnel is huge, and I think it makes a lot of us come back. But there'll be a day where, you know, unfortunately, there's people that can't make it back, but we love what we do, and as long as we can wake up every morning and do it, I'm sure, well, I'll keep doing it until I can't do it any much longer.
Sheldon, it's funny, when I rode and I had injuries and I would associate those injuries with, say, the post position the horse was in or the date it fell on, and I was very superstitious. Are you superstitious at all?
No, I wouldn't say I'm superstitious. I try not to be anyway. I might be a little bit, but not as much as what you used to go through now.
Well, you know, a lot of jocks.
I mean, but I see what
Christina used to go through. What did Christina used to go through?
Well, just like the numbers of the horses or the day that I fell. I would, you know, if I fell on a certain day or if it's Friday the 13th, no, not superstitious, not at all.
Now, I know a lot of professional athletes will have a pregame routine, so to speak. And Sheldon, you've been known to do kind of a pre-race thing where you'll listen to your iPad or iPod, whatever it is, before going to the paddock and get a little pumped up that way. Do you still do that?
Yeah, so I'll go in, I'll get the scratches and see what races I ride. Obviously get changed. I do some stretches, and just while I'm stretching, I'll have my earphones on and I'll be listening to my music. But in between races, yeah, I'll slip my music back on and just be there in my corner, just getting ready for the next race. But before the races start, yeah, it's probably where you'll find me listening to my music, yes.
What are your favorite songs?
Oh, no, we're not going into that.
Oh, come on. I think I've asked you this before, actually, because there was actually something
now it's going to get embarrassing, because that was a long time ago. You're not going to bring that up.
Okay, I won't bring it up. Are you talking about the Carrie Underwood thing?
Yeah, you're going
to
bring it up.
Mike, you need to know that he says he was stretching. He was actually dancing all around the jockstream.
Really? Is that what was going on?
That's what happened.
No, I'm a horrible dancer.
Have you met Carrie Underwood yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't, actually.
We're going to have to work
on that. It'll happen eventually, one day.
Visiting with Sheldon Russell here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Sheldon, I thought it was interesting that Christina asked you about getting nervous before the Derby. Is there ever a time that you still get nervous before just a race on a Wednesday or a Thursday afternoon, or are you past that stage now?
You know, there's definitely some races where you're a little bit more nervous than others. A lot goes into it. You know, you could be nervous having a speed horse on the way outside, or there's a, you know, on a speed horse and there's other horses to your outside. So every race is different, but I try and keep as, you know, quiet as I can. I try not to get myself worked up. I try and do as much homework as I the night before and watch replays and take away them nerves so that on race day I know what to expect. And I get the opportunity to ride for some really good trainers and, you know, put a lot of trust in me. So, you know, with the experience, I think the nerves have gone away. But I'd be lying if I said there weren't some races that I get a little bit more nervous than others.
How much has Sheldon Russell changed as a rider over the years?
Good question.
Thank you.
I'd like to say that I've matured a little bit. Like, I know, you know, the timing has got better, obviously, with the clock, and I have a rough idea on how fast the race is getting run. So I think, you know, just in this game, you just, as long as you get some experience and over here, that first year with your apprenticeship, that gives you a huge advantage. You know, you get to ride a lot of horses for a lot of big trainers, and you pretty much get a year to make mistakes. So with having such a good apprentice year and getting all them mistakes out the way and getting the opportunity to ride in the Kentucky Derby and winning some big races, I think just experience has helped me out a lot. And obviously to travel around, like I had a great time at Arlington last summer. That was my first summer there. So just traveling and riding at different racetracks definitely helps.
Sheldon, you just mentioned the clock in your head, and I've been asked that question a lot. A lot of people don't know what that means. Tell us how jockeys know how fast we're going and how we get that timing right, and just kind of describe to our listeners what that means.
You know, it just comes with the experience, you know, just to get a rough idea on how fast the horse is actually traveling. And, you know, with experience that will come, you'll know whether the horse is going, obviously, too fast in a race or if the pace up front is too slow. It's not something that you could learn straight away. It definitely takes experience. And, you know, having a few years under my belt of riding, I'm able to pick up on that. But, you know, it's not every race that I'm right. You know, sometimes I still get it wrong. So I'm still learning, which is always a good thing.
Is there anything you wish you could go back and do over again, Sheldon? Something that when you look back on it, you say, man, I wish I had done that a little bit differently.
Nothing that comes to the top of my mind, but I'm sure there is something along the line.
Okay, well,
gone back and done differently.
Yeah, let me take it this way then. If a young rider comes to you today and says, hey, Sheldon, I need some help. How can I get to where you are today, knowing everything that you had to go through to get to where you are? What are you going to tell that rider?
I think I learned a lot from spending the last 6 months of my apprentice year in New York. I mean, riding with them top riders. I think that looking back on now, I think that is where I learned the most. I mean, I rode with some really good riders back then. Ramon is actually still riding. You know, Javier was riding there. So just going back on my career, I think if I didn't spend that winter at Aqueduct a few years ago, you know, that was an eye-opening 6 months of my life, and I really did learn a lot from riding at Aqueduct that one winter. So if it wasn't a young rider and they were not sure on what they wanted to do, then I would say, yeah, take that opportunity and go ride in New York for 6 months, and if you can make it out there, then stay. Because that was a great learning experience for me. And, you know, hopefully one day I could I'd like to make it back out there.
Sheldon, you've ridden at Aqueduct, you've ridden at Arlington, but you mostly ride in Maryland. Are there any other tracks that you would enjoy riding at for a meet or however long?
You know, I had such a great time at Arlington. They really treat you really nicely then. They have a great turf course, and I met some really good people out there and rode for some really nice trainers. And, you know, this summer I'm not sure what I'm going to do because I know now that we have some racing in Maryland. So I'll just take it month by month. But I was glad that I got the opportunity to go out there last year. But I always think about trying to go back to New York for one winter. So we'll see at the end of the year how things are going here and whether or not I would like to make that move or not. But it's definitely something I've been thinking about for a while now.
You know, there's a reason that Sheldon Russell has been able to come back from the multiple injuries and been able to continue to ride at a very high level. And Sheldon, that's because of the fact that you're a tireless worker outside of the racetrack. You have a very strict fitness regimen that you'll follow. Tell us a little bit more about that and how you do keep yourself in such good shape.
Obviously, so when we race on my days off, I usually try and, you know, just try and stay healthy, try and stay fit. In the summer times, on like the Sundays, I like to, not all the time, but I like to compete in sprint triathlons where it's like a mini swim and then you do jump on the bike and then you do like a little half a marathon at the end of it. So I enjoy, you know, doing those on my Sundays when I'm not racing. And trainer Tim Keefe here in Maryland, he got me into it. So whenever we have a day off together, we'll either do some running or some swimming or some biking together. So it's nice to have somebody that's also interested in doing things like that.
It definitely helps that you're a well-rounded athlete. You're good at a lot of things. Were you involved in sports as a kid?
The only thing I used to do in high school was running. I really enjoy running. I wasn't much of a swimmer or a biker. I think I was too small for soccer, and we didn't really play American football in England. But I've always enjoyed running, and still to this day, yeah, on my days off, I'll go for a little run. I still enjoy it a lot, and it just helps me stay fit.
Continuing our visit with jockey Sheldon Russell on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on HRN. Sheldon, you've been leading rider multiple times at Colonial, at Pimlico, at Laurel and at Timonium. How much do riders pay attention to those standings during a particular meet, and what does it mean to be leading rider?
It really means a lot. Right now, I think I'm in second. I think there's one rider in front of me right now. It means a lot. Obviously, it's really nice to win races and to get the good horses and to get on a roll. But, obviously, there's a lot of good riders here in Maryland at this time. Trevor McCarthy is very good, Victor Carrasco, and there's another kid, Heavy on Toledo. So although we're all in a, we're all trying to win races, we're all very civil and we're all friendly to each other. And on the days off, there's no hate when one rider wins a race or has a 4 or 5 win day in the jocks room. I'd be the first to congratulate them because, I've had days like that in my career, and it's nice to see other people enjoying success. So, if it happens, it happens. But I'm happy for other people winning races. We're all trying to win and make a living. So, it's a good feeling, and I'm happy to say that I have some friends in the jocks room that are happy to see me winning, and likewise, I'd be there for them when they win races as well.
Christina mentioned earlier that a portion of the sponsorship from this show goes back to benefit permanently disabled jockeys through the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, and we're happy to do anything we can to help out. And Sheldon, I know that that's a cause that's near and dear to your heart. I see you at all of the Jockeys Guild meetings and the PDJF fundraisers. It's something that people need to be aware of, and it's something we need to all get behind to help out those riders that have given the sport so much, isn't it?
Definitely. I try and go every year to the meetings because it's such an eye-opener to see what everyone's trying to do to improve the sport and to look after the people that, have got hurt and can't continue to ride. So we just try and make the game better, and a lot goes into the meetings. We get to see which helmets are the safest. So every year we're trying to make it a lot safer and to take extra precautions out there and to save money so that, if we get an injury that we have some money put aside, for a rainy day. So I try and get as many riders here in Maryland to come up there every year and to join the Jockey Guild. Obviously, they'll take I think it's $4 out of every mount, and that goes towards helping the PDJF. So as long as we're all, working together, it's great. It's a great 3 days anyway out there.
Yeah, well said. Jockey Sheldon Russell here on Jock Talk. And Sheldon, it has been a delight to hear your story. Always fun to catch up with you, my friend. I want to wish you all the best moving forward, and safe trip, safe travels around the country, and look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Christina.
Thank you.
Sheldon Russell here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Man, it's just been a fun ride to go through his career.
And,
yeah, I mean, it always does, right?
And you look back on the first one with
Mike Smith. Yeah, just unbelievable. And you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, podcast of this show. All of our Jock Talk shows is available there. Search us on iTunes, HRN on iTunes. Put it in your phone. You'll get the podcast as soon as it's uploaded. It's a great way to listen to us whenever you like. It's, boy, it's so much fun. And to hear everything that Sheldon had to overcome in his career, and here's a guy that he seems to just do things the right way.
He does. He does. And he gives back. He helps others. And it's great to have people like that on the show.
What type of a rider was he like to ride against?
He was a good rider to ride against. He would keep them straight. He wasn't a dirty rider or wouldn't get in your way, really. And he was a clean rider. That's what we call them. So,
did you ever get into a stretch battle with him, just the two of you coming
down
to the wire?
It's funny, I did actually. I think it was the first race I won in Maryland.
Ooh, you outfinished him too.
I slipped up his inside, and he was like, "Nobody ever does that."
Well, you said you would kick his ass.
I would. But no, he was very good, very good. Even when I was there.
Yeah, so much fun to hear that story. We'll be back next Tuesday, a whole new edition of Jock Talk, and should be a lot of fun.
Oh yes. Always fun.
Always great to catch up. Don't forget, you can visit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund website, pdjf.org, and catch us every Tuesday, 6 to 7 Eastern, right here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Christina McManigal, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening, everybody.